Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 13. I'm just back from the Mobile World Congress and I thought you'd give an insight. And I've got with me Steve and Ewan. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Thank you, guys. Well, my first question is about Mobile World Congress, and I'm going to put in my own oar at some point because I was there on the show floor. But what I want to know from you is what did you think were the two most significant things in terms of announcements out of MWC that caught your eye? So let's go with Ewan first.
I think the first one, and we touched on this in an article on All About Symbian, was the fact that this was very much an iterative year of Mobile World Congress. There was nothing really earth-shattering. People in their own little capsule decide, oh, but product A was very earth-shattering, and B was, and C was, and D was. But overall, there was nothing really new. There was tweaks to interfaces, there was tweaks to specs, there was tweaks to, you know, more megapixels, more camera edge, more memory, slightly bigger screens, phones with slightly more bullet points, but there was no sort of sea change which you could put your finger on and just go, wow, the mobile world is really growing up. It's a case of, well, we have grown up and we've just matured a bit over the last year.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and I think that probably reflects the maturity of the mobile world. However, within that, I would say my impression on the floor was a lot of the evolution is getting to the point where it's becoming more mass market, or it's actually moving out of what I might call edge territory and into the mainstream. And I'm not just talking about S60 devices, and with N-series really starting to get joined up in some of the more advanced stuff it's getting. It's also the idea that feature phones are coming more mature, they can do more things, there's less of a distinction between smartphones and feature phones. The network technology in terms of HSDPA and HSUPA are very much here, and we're talking about implementations, and LTE trials are being demonstrated. But I'd agree with you, and there was nothing, you know, that struck me as massively new, but I think that's a reflection of the industry, and perhaps from being in it for too long. There are still some amazing products. There was Redius, which was an e-ink based phone. The N series are getting ever more powerful, but it perhaps is evolutionary. So I think, Steve, you'll probably jump in here with us saying that, won't you?
I actually wanted to pick you up on a point you just made about smartphones becoming feature phones and that whole convergence. I was staggered by some of the specs of some of the devices announced. Not that things like the N96 aren't impressive, they add an extra feature here and there, but one of the phones that Nokia announced was the 6220, which looks like a bog standard Nokia phone. It looks like it should cost 50 quid on a prepay plan. And yet it's got a 5-megapixel camera with Carl Zeiss optics, TV out, and GPS. And for something that, quote, lowly, to have that high a spec, I think this is really a sea change in, and that smartphone features really are now hitting home in the high street, in everyday phones that normal people can buy in a big, big way. And I think within a year or so, that this baseline specification, which things which used to demark a smartphone, will be very much in the mainstream.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. And what's interesting about that, of course, the 6220 is still a smartphone in the fact that it runs an open software platform, but it really is a feature phone target. It's going to cost 350 euros. Just to really reinforce that point, the N95 first came onto the market less than 12 months ago, and that phone has exactly the same specifications from hardware, with the exception of the bigger screen and some of the form factor issues. In fact, its software is more advanced because it has better geotagging built in and better integration with Nokia's OV services, and that kind of speed of development, and with which Nokia said it was going to go out to the mid-tier, but just how quickly that happened really blew me away. So going back to you, and what was your second major thing that you noticed?
I think part and parcel, two and three kind of, and it ties back to that. And it's the fact that these phones are becoming more commoditized. Motorola are obviously having doubts about being in the mobile market, and we've discussed that on a previous insight. But the fact that they didn't really have anything at Mobile World Congress was significant, I feel. They're used to having things like the Razr, which was a very much a luxury item that slowly seeped down to the mid-market that generated lots of sales because of its fashion. Yet we're talking about here about, you know, commoditization of phones, you know, Carl Zeiss, GPS, everything coming down into handsets at very minimal value, where the value in selling these things is in bulk. It's not a market that Motorola feel they can compete in. And as an aside, you know, breaking those new markets is about the only reason I can see for Sony Ericsson's move to Windows Mobile. Now, I got a little bit of a shtick in the article of nothing major happened at MWC when everybody went, but Sony Ericsson went to Windows Mobile. And you look at it, and the only reason they're going to that is to get a beachhead in America. The only business phones that sell in America at the moment are those powered by Windows Mobile. Sony Ericsson have tried with the UNQ before. I'm pretty sure that they will try again once they have an established name, which is what leads to the Xperia 1. But I suspect that's going to be rather like the LG and Samsung devices. It's going to be sold in low numbers. It's essentially a very big field test with 10 to 50,000 people paying to take part, so they can actually at least mitigate their costs in exploring new markets.
Yes, I think that's interesting. And what I'll just say, two things coming back, going back to your Motorola point, I think really here they've decided deliberately not to announce stuff. They know they're in problems. But in talking to them with regards to UIQ, for example, there's definitely activities planned then there. So I wouldn't necessarily write them off, but there was certainly a few raised eyebrows that they basically didn't bother to turn up to MWC, at least in terms of new phone announcements. It may be that they're working on quite a few things, and we may see some of that stuff later in the year. And I would expect Motorola to be able to stage at least a mini recovery based on some of the rumours that were floating around the conference. In terms of the X1 and Sony Ericsson going to Windows Mobile, I think people miss the bigger story there. I mean, of course, the Windows Mobile thing is significant, but as you quite rightly say, the message very strongly was it was a point solution deliberately designed for that high end, especially the North American market, and it didn't represent a strategic switch. Their main software platform remains UIQ and will be for the future. But what is interesting is Sony Ericsson launched the Xperia branding, and this is the first major brand launch outside the Walkman and Cybershot categories where they've been so successful. And again, I think this is an evolutionary thing for Sony Ericsson. It's looking to move into new markets, it's doing new branding, and for Sony Ericsson, I think more than any other mobile manufacturer, their play is all about the consumer experience, the sort of emotion, the experience they build around their products. And so that's where the Xperia is significant, and obviously the Xperia is going after that high-end market, and to my mind it's partially a response to the N series and the success that Nokia has had there, particularly with the very high-end N series. I'm thinking the N95 and the N96, and very specifically Sony Ericsson said, we don't necessarily expect this to be a Windows Mobile only thing. Of course, there will be a couple more Windows Mobile products. It would not make sense for them to do just one. But I would also expect in due course to see other platforms running Xperia products, and whether that's UIQ or perhaps even Sony Ericsson's proprietary technology, I think that's just a matter of time. But I would stress that it's that. I mean, that was by far and away the biggest buzz at the show, people looking at it, because it's a very nice piece of industrial design, but it's also very early days. It's not due out until September. Realistically, it maybe missed the Christmas market. If we'll have to wait and see on that, but certainly the software was in very early stages. There were just the panels on the front, which very pretty effects, I'd have to say, you know, under that it was running Windows Mobile, and they're obviously planning to do quite a bit there. They want to align the look across some of their phones, so they'll bring in the Walkman look for the media player and things like that. But we need to wait and see how Xperia is going to go, especially the X1. Steve, do you want to jump back in there?
Yeah, just a comment. Apart from all reports, every time anyone tried to do anything on the X1, other than just play with the Sony Ericsson flashing sort of panels, the staff people from the company leapt in and said, no, you can't do that. Now, obviously, it's beta hardware, beta software. It's more than that, though, because actually, and I know this is straying from all about Symbian territory because this is Windows Mobile, but it actually runs a version at the moment that it's not Windows Mobile 6 or Windows Mobile 7. The actual underlying operating system is still in a huge state of flux. And I think that this thing has not even hit the shops until 2009. I've been calling it a concept phone in the comments on the news story, and I think that's kind of what it is, really. It's showing Sony, as you say, it's a new brand for Sony Ericsson, a new possible direction, a new beachhead into America, maybe. But let's debut it for what it is. It's not a product that's coming out next month and you'll be able to buy. So people saying, oh, I'm going to hold on for it, or that's the most exciting product I've seen, they're kind of missing the point. This is not going to happen for months and months and months.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The N96 will be out before the X1, and you're absolutely right, Sony Ericsson weren't terribly keen on people playing with it in overly much detail. It probably does run a slightly different version of Windows Mobile. We'll hear more about that in due course, I don't doubt. and you're absolutely right, it is going to be a while. And so I think obviously it got a lot of excitement because it does have pretty amazing specifications, and I can tell you from handling the device, it's extremely nice design. It's actually being made by HTC, so it'll be interesting to see what the build quality and the camera is like when it actually comes out. But you can't help but wonder if Nokia is able to go from the something like the N95 to the N96, or perhaps more significantly from the N95 to the 6220 in a year. We're talking about another year perhaps before this device comes out, so who knows where other manufacturers will be. So Steve, I know we've sort of interrupted your two thoughts out of 3GS. I mean, you've kind of covered one of them already, but I'm sure you've got a second one. What was the other second thing you noticed out of 3GSM, or I should be saying MWC, of course?
Well, before my second thing, just to say I was a tiny bit disappointed that there weren't any new E-series devices. That was going to, of course, would have been one of my highlights. I suspect for people like myself who are hanging on for new E-series stuff that Nokia have got something perhaps at CeBIT coming out in a few weeks' time. So let's just hold fire with that. My second highlight from MWC, I will probably be the G700 and G900 from Sony Ericsson. Within the standard design and D-pad, I think these two, as with the Nokia 6220 that I mentioned, again, it sounds funny to see myself getting excited over comparatively low-end smartphones, low-end handsets, but I think these things really do have the potential to push the sales numbers up. Already we've seen during the show Symbian announcing sales figures at 77 million smartphones in 2007 alone, powered by Symbian OS. People saying, oh no, other manufacturers doing well, Windows Mobile, Apple. I think Symbian are going to go from strength to strength on sheer numbers alone. And I know that some of these things aren't being sold as smartphones, but hey, that's what they are, as you say, under the hood with the ability to add third-party applications. So for me, the G700 and G900, especially the G900, and for me as a power user, I love the fact it's got the Wi-Fi and the bigger camera. But the G700, again, like Nokia 6220, is going to do fabulously well. I wish it well. I want to play with one. And I think it's going to sell by the millions, if not the tens of millions. I hope it does anyway.
Yes, no, I agree with you. And just going back to what you were saying about the E-series devices, the word on the street, so to speak, was that the E-series devices aren't that long away. And I think I might contrast the E-series with the N-series in that the E-series do tend to come to the market a lot quicker once they've been announced. So when they do get announced, they'll probably be in the shops within weeks, if not months. And talking about, as you said, the G700 and the G900, absolutely. I mean, yes, they're still smartphones, but as we kind of said earlier, that's really irrelevant in one sense because they're enabling other sorts of technology. And perhaps the original promise of smartphones hasn't met the expectations or the reality that was expected, i.e. the idea of installing third-party software. But what has come in is what they can do in terms of lowering costs for manufacturers, for operators, for standardizing on a software platform. And of course, they still can add software and services. And I think that conundrum is still to be answered in how they can best do that. Part of the problem is being users just aren't used to it on phones. But the more phones it's on, the more people realize you can do it. And you interestingly said that the sort of G900 and G700 might not be, you know, perceived as smartphones, or the specs might not be good, but I was really blown away by the specifications of the G900 in particular. That's a 5-megapixel camera and Wi-Fi, plus 3G, of course. Unfortunately, it's not running HSDPA because it's the same hardware platform as the P1i and the W960. I imagine we'll have to wait until the next generation of that hardware platform, which probably isn't too far away before we see HSDPA, which is the only downer on those two devices for me. And I can also say, having actually used them, you can use them entirely with just using the directional pad and the soft keys. On the G700 you actually have hardware soft keys. On the G900 you still press the screen, but it's much less of an issue because the distance you have to travel is not so far. The other big thing I would also point out about those devices for previous UIQ users from Sony Ericsson is the back button is no longer on the side of the device. It's on the left next to the directional pad, and it makes it much less torturous reaching around the keyboard to do one-handed control. And the speed of those devices were incredible. I can remember the original UIQ3 device from Sony Ericsson, the P990, was horribly slow, and they've improved that over each of the devices. But the new ones, the G700 and the G900, you really couldn't tell the difference between them and Sony Ericsson's feature phones, which are notorious for being incredibly swift through their UI. And the other thing that gets me that's really interesting about the G700 and the G900, unless you know what you're looking at, it's actually quite difficult to tell that these are actually running a smartphone operating system, because the UI is such that it looks very much like Sony Ericsson's proprietary UI. And so for a lot of users, it's going to be very easy to transfer over to these devices. And for those who haven't seen them, and haven't actually seen them in the flesh, what's remarkable about them is their size. They really are the same size as something like the K850. They're very thin, they're very small, but they have a real power in their pocket. Not just the fact that they're sort of one-handed, but for those that like pen input, they're still completely pen input capable. And I think that might end up being a very big selling point, because they're the only devices that I'm aware of in that kind of feature phone size that have both one-handed input and pen input. There are things like the Palm Trios, but they're far more from the PDA end of things. These are feature phones, and it sort of combines the best of both worlds. So for those that like handwriting recognition, you can still do that, and there's a Jotter Notes application. Effectively gives you post-it notes on your mobile phone, and while some people are going to be, well, saying, I don't care about post-it notes on my phone, Sony Ericsson is going after a very specific market with these phones. They're going after the 30-plus market, which is an area they're not in at the moment compared to some of their other phones with their Walkman and their Cybershot brands. And I think Steve is spot on. I think these devices are going to sell very well because Sony Ericsson has a very good brand cachet, and I think they'll be able to exploit it with these devices. So I'm very much looking forward to those coming onto the market. So before I keep talking on, Ewan, was there anything else that caught your eye at MWC from in the UK?
Yet again, you've touched briefly on it, which is that number of Symbian smartphones shipped in 2007, 77.3 million. And it always intrigues me that Symbian published these numbers in the breakdowns, you know, things like royalty, average royalty, consulting service and such like, because as a private company, they don't have to. They're not stock market listed. And from everything that we hear from them, they have no plans of becoming stock market listed. These press releases are purely sent out to boast. It's a wonderfully understated British way, because everybody goes, oh, it's just like one of those things that you have to do when you're a company in the stock market, but it's not. The one thing that I would love to know that's not actually comes out in these press releases is how much profit Symbian is making. We know how much money they bring in from licensing, from consulting, from partner services. So for example, 2007, the turnover was 194.3 million UK sterling. We don't know how much of that's actually spent back out again on staffing or anything else. We don't know what sort of financial state Symbian is in, which I just find intriguing.
Well, I can give you a little answer to that, and I can tell you for the last 2 years Symbian have been profitable. And part of the reason they reduced their license fee was, which I think was 2 years ago at 3GSM they first announced, it's really been in effect for about a year now. And as you'll see from the recent set of figures, the average royalty per unit is declining. The reason they introduced that license fee change is because they were making money. And Symbian is very deliberately run on a zero growth cost strategy. In other words, they have a fixed cost base for their future development timescales. That means they're not spending any more money year on year. They're trying to keep the cost base the same. So that means, in fact, that the more licensees they have, or the more licenses that they sell, the more money they're making. So I suspect they're doing quite comfortably now. And if you go and read the figures carefully, you can get a fairly good idea of that. The other interesting thing about the Symbian numbers that I picked up on was they've now changed from talking about what they are in terms of the smartphone market. They're 70% still, but as we've discussed in the past, that's inevitably going to decline as more competition comes in, particularly from Linux, but also from Windows Mobile, because Symbian were a high watermark. But they're now instead focusing on how much of the total market they are, and they now represent 7% of the total mobile phone market. Now, that may not sound terribly significant, but when you consider it's 7% of a 1.2 billion per year pie, that's actually a lot of phones.
And I actually think it's a really good way to grow a company.
Absolutely. That's
it's when you take a company and you go, right, we're going to be number one in this field. Once you're at number one in that field, it's very hard to keep your staff energized. So your choices are to either try and keep them energized or to use Nigel Clifford's approach, which is choose another market where we're pretty low, in this case 7%, the global phone market, and go, right, that's the market we're in now. We're at the bottom. Let's try and go back up to number one. Again, it suddenly redefines everybody's company's long-term goals. It's very clear. It's very easily stated. And it's a wonderfully simple and classic marketing technique. Famously used, of course, by General Electric, GE in the US. Every time they became number one in a market, they moved somewhere else and just stormed right up again. I think that people always ask, well, what does the CEO do? Well, I think that it comes down from Clifford's background and giving good deliverable targets and keeping a company motivated that's essentially in a commodity, let's keep on making the same thing every year.
Well, you're clearly a fly on the wall at the Symbian lunch, Ewan, because that's the exact conversation I had with Nigel, talking about why they'd done it. And obviously there was some suggestion that maybe it was a way of redefining Symbian's numbers so that when the market share does start to fall, but that's not really the case. I mean, yes, it's useful massaging of the figures, but he was saying that it gives them a very useful target, and the target they're actually talking about is going to 10% of the market by, I think, 2010 was the date. And obviously that's going to be relatively difficult to do because the smartphone market isn't growing as quickly as it used to be, and there is more competition. So Symbian, with those announcements, kind of did blow other people's numbers away, and there was certainly MWC, the absence of some of the Linux vendors was notable, particularly Google Android, but also Limo, who were there, actually had various things on different stands. For example, they were on the Panasonic stand, and they sort of made themselves look very impressive by having 40 Linux phones with Limo logos on them, but of course these aren't really Limo phones because they're just Linux phones made by the member organisations of Limo, and they're still yet to be a true Limo phone, partly because they obviously haven't got the sort of standard APIs out, and that will come in due course. But there seems to be increasingly the feeling that Limo isn't really going to be a platform in the traditional sense, and that Android and Google in particular, it's very much divided into two camps. There are those who think it's going to change the industry, who are most definitely in the minority, and then the majority seem to think that Google are going to find it very difficult because the mobile world is far more complex than they really really understand, and that they're not going to just be able to walk in because the mobile world is a very collaborative place. So it's interesting to see that, and some of the backlash against the hype of Google that certainly appeared in the media. And when you ask people about it at the event, they sort of saw it really as a non-event. Even the presence of Google Android prototype phones on the ARM stand, for example, didn't really engender much in the way of excitement. One person I spoke to said it's not really anything new. Yes, they've got a nice GUI, they've got some good ideas and developer SDKs, but you only have to go and look at the high-end feature phones and the smartphones from both Windows Mobile and Sony Ericsson and Nokia to realise that actually the specifications are pretty weak. The software available is just about internet services and some calendaring. When you look at what Nokia is doing with Ovi, with the music store, with sharing, with Photograph, there's a much stronger message there, and they were wondering whether Google would be able to keep up simply because they didn't understand mobile and didn't understand the collaborative approach needed. So obviously I could talk a lot about what I saw at MWC, but are there any specific questions that weren't clear that you guys have? Ewan?
What about the numbers? I mean, you and I were at the last Mobile World Congress when it was along the coast in France at Cannes. And I know you said last year that the numbers at Barcelona were bigger. I mean, what was the buzz at the event? Was it even more bigger in the same place? Was it more crowded? Did it expand out over more places? I mean, what was the physicality of the event like?
Well, that's an interesting question. From the point of view that I thought it couldn't get any bigger than last year, but it was. Last year there were 50,000 people, this year there were 55,000 people. The stands were packed closer together, there were bigger crowds. In previous years it's always been that the first 2 days are very busy. On the second day it was still busy. On the third day it seemed to be even busier than the second day, and it was only on the afternoon of the fourth day that things died down enough that I was able to go and get close to some of the phones that were being displayed. It was actually only on the last day that I really got some decent hands-on time with the N96, which I'm sure we'll discuss all the new devices in forthcoming podcasts, because obviously there's a lot to talk about. But to answer your question, Ewan, it was bigger than ever before, and there was actually a much wider reach as well compared to Cannes, which was, I guess, 3 years ago now. Rather than just being kind of a business-to-business thing with some device announcements, now there are a lot of device announcements. There were announcements from LG, from Samsung, from Nokia, from Sony Ericsson, from a lot of the smaller guys as well. It was the whole ecosystem. There were software developers there launching stuff. There was the networking stuff in terms of LTE and all that kind of thing. I'm still sort of going around in my head like a washing machine. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it in one place at one time, and it's going to take me a few days to digest it. But I thought I'd just finish by telling you I thought I'd just finish by telling you what were my highlights of the show. And I'm actually going to pick out the N78 for a bit of extra praise, because I don't think it's got enough it's deserved. I actually agree with Steve that the 60210 and 60220 are very significant, the G700 and the G900. And obviously there's loads of focus on the N96, but take a closer look at the N76, because that has some very, very impressive...
78,
thank you, Steve. 78, that has some very impressive features for a phone that is effectively replacing the N73. It's quite somewhere ahead of that. And we'll have a preview up later in the week. But actually, of all the things I saw, that was probably the one thing that impressed me most in terms of how advanced it was, and just some of the things that they'd done with it. And they had a very passionate demo team there showing it off, and I was really impressed with the message they were giving across. So I know while I've been away, the news has been flowing on as usual. So is there anything I should know about that I've missed this week, Ewan?
Well, I know Steve's champing at the bit. Steve, you've not been lost this week, have you?
Indeed, I haven't. Nokia very kindly sent us an exclusive preview of Maps 2.0. So I set about downloading it. I installed it. And then a day later, they go and release it anyway to the world, which is rather pointless. But there we go. Maps 2.0, the next generation version of Nokia's freebie Maps package, is now available. Everyone can go and grab it. I've been running it round and about in Berkshire for the last 2 or 3 days, and I've been quite impressed. As usual, if you want voice navigation and indeed even routing, I think with version 2.0, for any practical purposes, you've got to stump up the fee. It's only a pound or so for a day, or £5 for a month. It really isn't a lot of money. I don't hold any truck with these people criticizing Nokia for making a small amount of money for this. Nokia are putting a huge investment into this product, as with other commercial sat-nav packages. These things are worth rewarding, and I don't think £5 for a month voice-guided navigation is out of the order, out of the question, given that the competing sat-nav packages are about £70 to £80. And I know that's a one-time thing, but hey, you need Nokia Maps on a particular device for a holiday, you pay your £5. That's nothing in the context of a holiday, for example. Whereas on a traditional thing, you spend £70 for a device. A year later, you've got a different device, and you've either got to buy it again or go through a whole heap of trouble and hassle transferring your license to the new device. So I fully get behind Nokia's way of doing it. Nokia Maps 2.0 is very good. There's a pedestrian mode in which it actually senses the direction you're moving, even if you haven't got an accelerometer and device, just by looking at the way your position's changing, and it reorientates the device, rotates it on screen as you walk along, so that the map is always up in the direction which you're going. So the pedestrian mode is fabulous. It's also cheaper. If you can actually sign up now for just the pedestrian mode and pay about half the fee, which again I think is a cracking move. So there's lots more to unpack in Maps 2.0. I'm going to aim to do a full review over the next 2 weeks for all about Symbian, so watch for that. Yes, anything you and
I was just going to say, yes, we should definitely talk about it in more detail in the podcast, and I'll just give it a thumbs up from Barcelona, where it's an absolute nightmare trying to get around all the different venues in different hotels. I paid my £3 for the week of for the month of pedestrian navigation, and it didn't let me down once, so I was really impressed with that as well. Ewan, what else have I missed this week?
Probably coming in at the tail end for Mobile World Congress was the N-Gage, sorry, it's not the N-Gage, the Nokia title YAMAKE, Y-A-M-A-K-E, standing for You Make the Game. This is Nokia's play into user-generated gaming. I've not actually seen it running yet. Details are still sketchy beyond the press release, but basically this allows you to take the skeleton of small mini-games, wrap them up with your own themes, graphics, sounds, video, package them up into a group of games, and basically create your own game, which can then be packaged out over MMS or uploaded to the YAMAKE community. Raising my eyes for a couple of ways. One, it's a lovely viral distribution. You make a game, you send it out to somebody else. I really hope Nokia have a player that's free. You know, if you want to edit the games in, maybe you pay for £3 to £5, but just to play the game, hopefully they have a free engine. But also the fact in the press release that it says that you will be able to MMS the games out to N-Gage users and other S60 devices. Already, the N-Gage is the gaming paradigm has been broken by Nokia themselves, not even before we've got to the full launch. Love it. Lovely. It's just, and I love the idea of this making it very simple. I mean, Steve and I have programmed stuff like this before in terms of gaming, and we'll probably poo-poo it, but for kids to make up their own maze with, you know, their dad's face on them, and they have to run away from their dad and get into the sheds to get their bikes or whatever, I think we're going to see a wave of creativity here. And of course, Nokia are going to have this huge batch of people making games for their device at no cost to them, sending them out virally. It's a wonderful marketing and PR pitch. And it just has so many evil layers. I just love it.
Okay, well, do you think it'll be easy enough for me to use you? And well, let's hope so.
Okay, guys. Oh, I don't even get to reply to that one.
No, I'm not going to let you jump in there. So I'm sure we're going to have to come back to a lot of the stuff that announced at MWC. Please accept our apologies for the fact we've gone through this rather haphazard fashion. I've only just got back and we're really all still digesting the new devices, the new software, the new services, the new everything else. And we'll come back to many of these in a future insight. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye from me, Ewan Spence.
And from Steve Litchfield.
Thanks, guys, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
You've been listening to the All About Symbian podcast, www.allaboutsymbian.com. Copyright 2007.